This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
A recent survey done by the AARP, 89% of older adults want to age in their own homes and their own neighborhoods. Tonight, we're going to talk with Hannah Ondler, founder of Villagers Northwest, a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to bring together people to essentially spearhead the organization of resources to help the aging community remain comfortably in their own homes. In other words, these villages embrace the strategy of bringing services to people rather than moving people to services. Before we dig in with Hannah, it's important that we set the intention and the purpose of my setting and being on this show this evening. So here's what I believe. I believe that in order to do well, we must first be well. And I advocate this message as an author, a host of this show here on Bread and Roses, and as a producer of lectures and fairs, all of which are in support of providing space to obtain information, education, and discussion around well-being. If you want to know more about me and what I'm up to in the community, please, you can visit me at www.delarae.net. Della is DELLARAE.net. So now it is fitting that we welcome Hannah Ondler, founder of Villages Northwest, to join us because I believe that aging and health goes hand in hand with well-being. Welcome.
Thanks, Della. It's great to be here.
So let's just jump right in. And I want to ask you, you know, why are you here? Why are you driving this vision? Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a 59-year-old wife and mother who lives on the side of Portland's extinct volcano, which is to say I'm a Mount Tabor resident. Why I'm doing it originally started out because my husband and I wanted to have a village to age in ourselves. When we got older, you know, our goal was that we wanted to live in a village. We wanted to be part of the community. We wanted to stay in our own home. And so we figured, well, you know, sometimes you have to be the change you want to see in the world. If you want to have a village, you better get busy trying to build one. Mm-hmm. That led us to start putting the word out really broadly to people. And it's really critical that there's a village not just for me, but for anyone in Portland and in the whole metro area who wants to be able to age in place.
Yeah. So, and you know, before we had the show, I asked you the question and you talked about, you know, what happened with you at the age of 39.
Well, I told you that I've been the oldest living person in my family since my late 30s. My mother died very young. My grandmother, who was the oldest person, died by the time I was in my late 30s. So I've always been the matriarch of my family. I've always been the person who had to figure out how we were going to pull it all together for myself and for my sisters and brothers, and now for my own children. So I think it's kind of a natural role for me to say, you know, how do I make this happen for anyone who needs to have it? Mm-hmm. Because I'm concerned. You know, you gave the statistic that there are going to be almost 400,000 people over the age of 65 by 17 years from now. Mm-hmm. Where are they going to go? Mm-hmm. I mean, even if they wanted to go, there are not existing facilities and there are not facilities that are going to be built mm-hmm. that can accommodate that kinds of numbers. We need to stay in our own homes and we need to have the support in our homes to be able to do that safely and healthily and affordably.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say we need, you said two words, we need, and you said villages. So tell me why, before we get in, dig into the villages and what they are specifically, why is, you say need, why is aging in place a good idea? What's the need about?
Well, I mean, you quoted, most people want to age in place. It's the preferred, you know, it's the preferred way of aging. The village movement was originally founded by people who did not want to have to move to a facility. They didn't want to have to go to assisted living. They didn't want to go to independent living. They loved the brownstones they lived in Boston, and they wanted to be able to stay there. But they wanted to be able to stay there without being a burden to their adult children. They thought, you know, I don't want to ruin the relationship I have with my child by making it so that every time the person comes over, they have an ongoing list of things they have to do for me because I'm no longer able to do that for myself. And that's a really important part of this whole issue around need, because as we age, and none of us knows what the trajectory of our aging is going to be, we do need certain things. We need help with things. We may need help because we don't drive at night any longer. Mm-hmm. We may need help because it's not safe for us to climb up on a ladder to change a light bulb. We may not be able to safely flip our own mattresses anymore. You know, we can't reach the thing on the top shelf. Or as my favorite story is, we can't catch the cat to put it into the cat carrier. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of things that we will need, and we don't know all of what they're going to be. But the question is, how are those needs going to be addressed? How are they going to be provided for?
Right. So I want to ask you again, I want to just stay on this point. Why are villages a good idea?
Well, villages are a good idea because aging in place is a good idea. And aging in place is a good idea because, first place, people who age in place live longer. It's just a matter of they have a better quality of life, they have better health outcomes, and they have greater self-esteem and self-efficacy than people who move into institutions. It's also a massively cost-effective solution. Independent living is a minimum of, or assisted living is a minimum of around $3,000 a month at its most economic. When you get into higher levels of care, you're talking $5,000 or $6,000 a month minimum. The estimates is that people age in place for a fifth of those costs.
Wow. So you were talking about Boston. Tell us more about the origination with Boston. You told me a great story about Boston. Share that with us.
Well, the village movement began in a neighborhood of Boston called Beacon Hill. And the first village is called Beacon Hill Village because it's named after that neighborhood. What happened where there were 12 neighbors, most of them women, some of them married, some of them not married, some of them with children, some of them not, who got together in someone's living room one day and said, you know, we don't want to leave our house. We don't want to be burdens to our adult children. We don't want to move into a facility and have a social worker half our age tell us when we should eat and what music we should listen to and what kind of activities would be appropriate for someone our age. We want to stay here. So the question is, how do we bring services to us instead of moving us to services? Because they were in Boston, they went to the Harvard Business School and said, we have this crazy idea. You know, do you have any idea about how we should structure this? And basically, they got the answer that they should structure it as a nonprofit and a membership organization, that people would join the village and they would be members. And the idea would be you would create an organization that was very low overhead, maybe a village manager and a volunteer coordinator, but no building, no fancy overhead, nothing to maintain, and that it would be driven by volunteers, by the volunteers who run it and the volunteers who assist with providing services to the members, and then coordinating local resources and also vetted vendors. Some strategic partnerships. But it's a matter of figuring out how to take everything that's already there and negotiating for really good deals and then recruiting and training volunteers and getting a community involved. You know, it's neighbor caring for neighbor.
Nice, nice. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO 90.7. We have this wonderful conversation going on with Hannah Andler, the founder of Villages Northwest. And of course, we are taking callers. If you want to call in and join this conversation, you are certainly welcome. 503-231-8187. And Hannah, I want to go back to the numbers, how this affects women, and your take on what this looks like for women.
Well, I mean, it's no secret to anybody that the women are the primary caregivers in this culture. And they continue to be. What we know in terms of even in Portland is that of the seniors who live alone, one-third of them are women who are living all by themselves. And this is a movement that will provide a way for them not only to participate in community, but to be cared for by community, to be interacting. One of our future members, she is a single woman, and she commented as a widow that it would be worth it to join the village if only she could get some guy who really liked cars to go with her when she went to buy her next car. Mm-hmm. Because she felt like he could help her ensure that she got the right deal on it. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that in terms of the neighborhood and the involvement, there is a tremendous range of services and a tremendous range of interaction that's possible. Everything from people who would go with you to the doctors, mm-hmm. people who would help you fill out insurance forms, people who would help you negotiate a car deal or work with you in terms of finding a plumber. Mm-hmm. So the idea is what is necessary for you as an individual or as a couple to be able to remain in your own home?
So this is what it boils down to. It boils down to this being a solution for seniors to not only stay in their homes and age in their homes, but a way for community to pay it forward and stay involved. And so I remember when I was a kid, we had a neighbor down the street. Her name was Mrs. Burns. And when she would open up her front door and stick her head out, we knew that she needed something from the store, or she needed a newspaper, and we wasted no time. We knew that she needed us. So is this kind of the same model?
It's kind of the same model. If you were a village member, or Mrs. Burns were a village member, she would probably call the office and tell the office whatever it was that she needed. Now, I wouldn't have wanted to cut into your paper route gig, so that would probably continue on the side.
Okay. That's good to know. Can you tell me a little bit more about this being a cheaper alternative to the taxpayers and what that means?
One of the things that is true is that because there are an increasing number of people aging, there is an increasing market to sell people services. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you want to have your mother have a caregiver of mm-hmm. some kind, and not necessarily personal care, but even someone to help her with her scrapbooking and drive her to the doctor and help her with her laundry and do the groceries, that kind of thing. You can pay a service mm-hmm. to do this. And the going rate in Portland to pay for somebody to do that is between $19 and $22 an hour. Mm-hmm. And usually there's some kind of minimum because you're booking through an agency. What we anticipate with the village is that the rate will probably come in at somewhere around $12 to $13 a week mm-hmm. for all the services that you would get through the village.
Okay.
So you're talking about a massively different economic model.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I might be just jumping up and down on the whole point of villages, but I want to make sure that our listeners understand the villages and what they actually mean and how they're set up. And I like what you said about you want to be on your own. You don't want to be a client.
Well, one of the things that is different from village is that they're actually an empowerment model because they're putting people in the position where they're members and they're stakeholders and they're literally owners of this village. They elect their own governing council. The governing council of the village hires their village manager. Mm-hmm. So they're in control of their own world, okay, which is a great thing because the relationship that we have with the rest of the world is that we're either a patient or we're a client or we're a customer. Mm. We're someone to be receiving or purchasing, or someone else is in a position to determine who we are and what we need.
Very cool. So what would you say, how would you best explain in like 1 second around the villages and how you are thinking to set up your village here in Portland?
Well, we started out doing it the way most villages start out, which is we had parlor meetings, and we basically put out the word that we were doing this and invited people to come to our living room. And we sat and we talked about it. And over the course of several months, we recruited enough people who live in our geographic area, because villages are geographic. You know, there are a certain number of neighborhoods next to each other. And we found enough people who lived in those areas who wanted to have a village. And at that point, we coalesced it into a planning group. And that planning group has set the boundaries of the village. It's begun the process of writing bylaws for the village. It is recruiting more volunteers. It's going to be doing outreach at all of the street fairs, you know, the Clinton Street Fair, the Hawthorne Street Fair, the Belmont Street Fair. We started writing grants to get funding to do outreach. And we're going through all the development process that will eventually culminate with having fundraised enough money to have some reserve to get the village going and found a place, a little place to have an office in, and trained up, you know, recruited volunteers to begin delivering services and recruited members. And then hopefully by late 2014, the East Side Village, which is the first of these villages, will actually launch. It'll begin delivering services. But before then, we'll be doing social stuff. We're starting right now to plan what kind of social activities we're going to be doing with people who are interested in being part of the village. We'll probably go into educational programming. We'll probably do some fitness stuff. Mm-hmm. So the idea is you kind of gear up for the launch of the actual launch of services.
Nice. What I want to do now is go to a break. Give us a chance to catch our breath. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. We are Bread and Roses, and we'll be right back.
Under the crystal blue in the valley by the river where I made love to you.
We're back. You are listening to KBOO Portland Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Della Ray. I just played a song for you, Sam Walker, and that was given to us by local talent Noah Kite and Corey Disler. They make up Zinni for short. Love that song. I want to play it every time, all day. So we are here in a really great conversation with Hannah Andler, who is the founder of Villages Northwest. And before we left for break, we were really talking about the setup of the villages and what that means and what it looks like. And so I want to give it back to you, Hannah, to talk a little bit more about the setup of the village and what that looks like.
Well, villages can come in a variety of different sizes. But, you know, right now the going advice is to try to find an area in which there is probably around 10,000 people over the age of 65. So you're looking at trying to find an area that has a large concentration of people who are seniors who are going to be aging in place. What I love about the Portland neighborhoods is if you ever want to figure out how many baby boomers there are in a neighborhood, if you know how many seniors are, you just double it and you're pretty much where the boomers are. The area that we've kind of laid out for the first village, which is Eastside Village PDX, it is all a part of 12 Portland neighborhoods. So it's not a small little thing.
Right.
You know, people think, oh, this is a place. It's not a place. It's a swath, a large swath that includes 10 neighborhoods that are in the Southeast Uplift area, and then another two that are in East Portland.
Right.
So it kind of crosses those boundaries. It incorporates all of it. You choose boundaries for a village based on, you know, do you have the right demographics? Do you have 10,000 people over the age of 65 who live in those neighborhoods? Do you have people who are members of those neighborhoods, who are residents of those neighborhoods, who want to be part of a planning group? Because this is a grassroots movement.
Yes.
It's, you know, Villages Northwest will help anybody who wants to start a village.
Yes.
But they've got to eventually coalesce it from their own neighborhoods.
There you go.
Because it's totally community-based.
Okay? Yes.
And then the other thing is you look for what naturally occurring boundaries are. So, for instance, the top boundary for us on Eastside Village is the band field.
Mm-hmm.
It's a logical place. It divides off, you know, one part of Portland from another. The river is also a natural boundary. So Eastside Village is, as you would expect, on the east side of the river.
Right. Nice. Okay. We have a caller, Jim, who's joining us. Hi, Jim. Thanks.
Okay.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, I didn't want to mess up the women's thing. I'm a retired pastor, and I get a lot of concerns about how males tend to dominate too much. I'm not trying to do that, but I just have a question or two.
Sure. What is it?
Well, I'm a retired clergy. I'm my late wife died about a little over 4 years ago, and I've been through two of those with disabilitating diseases. Anyway, the long and the short of it is I don't own a house. Have in the past. I don't now. Don't have the money to do it. In my retirement, that's not a possibility. I'm sure there are at least one or two other folks out there, women and men, who are widowed, who don't have a home. Mm-hmm. And is there anything going for people like that who are trying to live out and figure out how to live in a rental that periodically raises rents that sometimes make you have to look for another rental on a lower economic level? That was all.
That's a really good question, and I'm going to turn that over to Hannah.
So in terms of housing, one of the things that we're hoping there will be a lot of within the boundaries of the village, because you don't have to be a homeowner to be a village member. You can be a homeowner. You can be a renter. You can be someone who lives with a family member. It's really open to all different kinds of people. But one of the things that we hope will be developed a lot inside the boundaries of the village will be shared housing. And there's a great organization in Portland called Let's Share Housing. And they are a tremendous resource if you're looking for a shared housing situation. And that might be a really good option in terms of a way to bring down expenses. We think it's great to have shared housing inside a village, because if you have shared housing inside a village, you have however many older people being able to support each other, but also getting the support from the village. If the shared housing is outside the boundaries of the village, then they have less support automatically available to them.
You know, that's a whole psychic thing that goes. As I said, I'm a retired pastor, and I understand that if you don't have some kind of community around you to support you, whatever situation you're in, you're in pretty rocky shape.
Absolutely. I always tell everyone, you know, I'm married, But like you, I do not know whether I will die first or my husband will die first. Right. And people do not necessarily like talking about this subject. I'm going to be really upfront and say talking about aging, talking about dying, talking about being widowed is not a popular topic. On the other hand, I look at it this way. In the event that I do die first, I'm really happy that I'm going to have a village that my husband is going to be a member of, because it means that he will have that support. He will have all of these people who we have all these relationships with, who will make sure that he does not grieve alone. They'll make sure that he doesn't become isolated. They will make sure that he doesn't go hungry. I can guarantee that there will be plenty of people who make sure that he has meals and that all the things that I might have done, someone else will help him figure out how to do.
Thank you very much for the answers. I appreciate it. I will get off the air and let somebody else get on.
Jim, thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening. So, Hannah, that was really great. I think that there's so many people out there that have these kinds of questions. They just want to know how they can get connected. And I was really appreciating what you were talking about around how the villages are set up. And it's the people that come to, what you mentioned earlier, the parlor meetings, that take on the responsibility of building this village and vetting the services and whatnot that people that need the services of the village provide. Yeah. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
You have it right. What we work on doing is helping people coalesce planning groups, because what you have to do is bring together a reasonable number, not a huge, but a reasonable number of people who are committed to the idea that they want to make a village in their neighborhood. And they are committed to working at that process together over the period of probably a couple of years.
Nice. So you're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland 90.7. We're taking callers 503-231-8187. We're talking to Hannah Andler. She is the founder of Villages Northwest. And this is so great, talking about people wanting to age in their own homes and how this is an alternative, a service to make that more possible. Really great. And we have a caller, Marie, on the line.
Yeah. Yes, what a wonderful project. And I have a couple questions and a couple points as well, and I'll try to just be succinct and get right to them. So one of my questions is, I'm wondering if you all might want to set up a system of credits for people that don't have much cash. Let me give you an example. I know many people in this village project, maybe they might be able to be doing tutoring. I've done a year of tutoring through a local college. Maybe there's a way that they could be doing something like that and build up credits. Maybe there could be some kind of an equity program or reduction in cash. That's one of my ideas and questions. And let me just list a couple other, then you could just answer them all. I'll just do a cluster if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then another thing is, honestly, this is such a really interesting idea. I really do hope you all can do a second or third, maybe even third program on this, because there's just a lot of detail on it. I have been a certified nurse's aide, and I do have a moderate background in elder care. Also, I'm not a pastor like the other caller, but I do have a certificate as a deaconess in Hispanic ministry. So I'm really into communicating issues and human social justice issues. So some other ideas I have is, I'm wondering with the village program if they could have weekly meetings. The reason is, let me tell you why. Because maybe the people that would want to hire someone, maybe they'd like to get to know them better. And let me give another fine-tuned example. Let's say someone would like someone to help with their garden because they share the same gardening philosophy, but they don't like how that person drives, so they want someone else to help them with driving. So those are why I think maybe they might want to find a way to be a little bit more carefully and closely networked so that they are really truly a village and not just calling someone. People that they really have developed kind of deeper networking. So I'm hoping these are useful ideas, and I'm hoping that you all might want to do this program a little bit more in depth.
Sure. So
if you all have any more comments back from what I said, I can get off the air if you all want to have
sure.
a couple of
minutes. Well, we definitely want to make sure we answer your question, and Marie, we really appreciate you calling in. So do I understand your question as, is Villages Northwest considering the possibility of people like yourself who can offer services in return for credit to get services that they may also need. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, and let me give you another example. Let's say someone is a great gardener. For me, I have 7 years of being organic gardening. They could do gardening for someone in swapping up for something else that may be a heavier duty thing. So they might want to consider something like that.
Yeah.
So we probably will not do direct exchanges. You know, in other words, we're not setting up a system of bartering. That's not what this is. Okay. What you have in a village is you have lots and lots of people who volunteer. And you have usually a village volunteer coordinator who works really hard at figuring out how to correctly match those people to the people who need services. Because as you pointed out, that's a really key thing. So for instance, let's say I'm someone who wants to drive. You're going to try to find me people who need to be driven at times that work for me and times in which I can build an ongoing relationship with people by regularly driving them, for example, to the grocery store or to doctor's appointments. You're someone who has skill as a gardener. You might volunteer your skills as a gardener, and we would match you up with people who need that particular service. The idea is that we're all paying it forward. We're all exchanging our skills and talents, and that when we need it, someone will pay it forward for us. That's, you know, the basic premise. Now, you talked also about the idea of being able to accrue credits and whether there was some kind of, if not employment, some kind of way to earn something with it. You know, any village can design any auxiliary programs it wants to design. So if, for instance, there was a local college and they wanted people to tutor, there is no reason the village couldn't take on finding people to do that. And if they got paid, that would be great, too. It would just be an additional program of the village. So villages are very creative. They're very flexible. They're very responsive. In the end, each village is going to be determined by the people in that neighborhood.
Okay. Marie.
Thank you. So interesting. Thank you very much.
No, thank you for calling. So we are just knee-deep in this conversation that I think is so needed, and the response that we're getting is really great because this is, you know, here I am thinking about what's going to happen when I get older, and this is something we need to think about. It's definitely something we need to talk about, and I really appreciate you stepping up, naming those couple of things that we don't like to talk about, but it's time that we do. So I have another question for you, Hannah,
mm-hmm.
And it's about, there's services that you provide. You mentioned, you know, light bulb changing. You mentioned, you know, grass being cut, gutters being cleaned out for
dogs being walked.
Those kinds of things for people who want to stay in their houses. What about meals and medication?
All right. So I always like to say that the kind of services that villages deliver by volunteers are the kinds of things that you could ask your child to do if they came over to visit mm-hmm. you. You know, like what you'd put on the honey-do list. I need you to take me to the grocery store. I need you to do this. Villages do not do personal care. They don't do bathing. They don't do wound changing. They don't do medication management mm-hmm. because it's not legal. These are all licensed medical things.
Okay, so then will you be collaborating with partners?
Yes, we will. What mm-hmm. villages do is they find good home care companies, good agencies, good providers. They carefully background check them, and then they negotiate a discount. And so, generally speaking, you would have a situation where you would have anywhere between a 20 and a 40% discount on those kind of personal care services that you needed to receive.
So essentially, your village that you've put together is going to connect with partners and really form those relationships.
And local businesses, too, because you're in a situation where there are other things you don't do as volunteers. You can do minor repairs. Someone can, you know, tighten your loose doorknob.
Right.
But if you need to have a new roof, if you need to have your plumbing fixed, if you need to have electrical work done, you don't want a volunteer to do that because it would void your homeowner's insurance. So instead, what the village does is the village creates a system, like Angie's List, of vetted vendors, people who they have met with, they have found that these people have the right philosophy. Mm-hmm. They care about the clients they're going to work with, the customers they're going to work with, and they also negotiate discounts right. with them.
Right.
So that, again, it's how do you get what you need as economically
sure.
as possible.
Right. So we do have another caller on the line, Jody.
Hello.
Hello, Jody. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Della and Hannah?
We're great. And you?
Just fine, thank you. I'm so glad that you are talking about this. Thank you very much.
What in particular strikes out to you, Jody, or did you have a question?
Well, I just think it's very important to acknowledge when someone is getting the message out there. And I agree with you that people don't necessarily like talking about aging, death and dying, hospice, all those things that we try to avoid. So I just, when I heard this going on, I just wanted to let you know that I appreciate that. Because I've been the family caregiver mm-hmm. for my mom for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it actually led me to a career change. So helping seniors to age in place with dignity and to be as independent as possible is near and dear to my own heart.
Mm. So you are an advocate now? You said it led to a career change. What does that mean?
Well, I actually, while my mother was still alive, she unfortunately, she fell and broke her arm and hip.
Mm.
And this was mine and my father's first experience in what a skilled nursing facility was because she had to be in one for a month.
Mm-hmm.
We had to figure out everything on our own, but it was while she was at that particular facility, I had read in a business magazine about the baby boomers. So everything you were saying with those figures, I'm very familiar with. And I'm going, okay, I just read this article. I look at my mom. I'm looking at this facility I'm in, and I just said, Mom, I know what I'm going to do the rest of my life, and it's gerontology.
Yeah, nice.
Led me to social services. And from there, now I do community relations, and I just love it. I'm talking to hospitals and doctor's offices, retirement communities, and it's just getting the word out and just the general public so people can start getting ready for what's going to happen with all of us.
So, Jody, can I ask you a question? You said sure. you go into hospitals. So are you in a retirement home then? I mean, is that what you do? Or
actually, I work for a in-home care service company. It's called Helping Hands Home Care. And right, so what our service does, and Hannah, I've actually touched upon this, we do from companionship to comprehensive medical. So it could be that someone needs assistance for short term because they just had surgery. It might be for long term. It might be family members need respite.
So
I remember my dad and I could have used help, and it was like the best kept secret. That there are services out there.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why people, adult children, commonly buy their parents' memberships in villages
mm-hmm.
because they don't have to worry about them
mm-hmm.
then. It's a great load off everybody's shoulders.
Right.
Yeah. And in particular because it's highly affordable.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a ton of social activities, so they're guaranteed that their parent is getting a lot of interaction. Educational things, fitness things, and then all of the things that they might have to do. I mean, recently I had a friend who became ill, and he needed meals made for him, and he needed someone to drive him to the hospital, and he needed all of those things. And it was quite an abrupt transition in his life. He had been completely self-sufficient, and then one day, all of a sudden, he wasn't. But the point of having a village or having a support system in place is that since you don't know what's going to happen, when you have it as an adult child and your parent is in this system, you don't have to worry.
Right. But what I hear, and for people who know me know that I'm a connector and a convener. So what I hear is, Hannah, you're saying that, you know, that you have this village that provides these services that does not perhaps provide medical, and you are looking at collaborative partners. Maybe, Jody, did you say helping hands?
Yes.
And maybe down the road, this could be a collaboration.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I like about this. You know, there's always ways that we can work together.
At one of the first partnerships Beacon Hill Village made was with a local home care.
Nice.
Who was willing to give substantial discounts to their members for services and not have a month, you know, minimum, mm-hmm. not a weekly minimum. Mm-hmm. And they collaborated, and they still collaborated 12 years later.
Nice. Well, after the show, let's get you two connected. Jody, perhaps you can leave your information, but you did say Helping Hands Healthcare? Home
yes,
Care?
Helping Hands Home Care. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jody. We definitely appreciate your support. And you just never know. This could, you know, a couple years from now or 2014, we could be all together talking about, you remember when we were on the radio and we met this way. So thank you, Jody. Have a wonderful evening.
You too, both of you. Thank you very much.
Bye now. So we are listening. We are Bread and Roses. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. I want to take a quick break and give us a chance to bring it back together, give you your ears a rest here. We'll be back in just a minute.
Take the long way home. Listen to the low roll of the wheels on the road. Watch the last bits of dusk play through the trees, those silhouetted husks, breathless in the breeze. Feel the light break up through the boughs, the yearning of the call, the only sound. Attention turns to you, seated next, staring out the window, your sunset's eye. Mind turned to the mountains, dressed in red. It's a moment in the car, a moment at the door, a glance from the porch that tells me you don't want this.
We're back. You are listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland 90.7. I'm your host, Della Ray. And again, I just played another Zinni for Short song, and it was called Long Way Home. I was in here just grooving out. I love that song. We are here with Hannah Andler. Hannah is the founder of Villages Northwest, and which is, I just love what this community is about and the possibility and the potential. And before we left for break, we were talking a little bit more about the collaborative piece of it, but I want to go back and really give our listeners a deeper understanding of how to get a parlor started that can lead to a village in your own neighborhood. So is it as simple as just taking a look around your own neighborhood and calling a parlor meeting? Or do you first suggest that people go to your awesome website, which, by the way, is one of the most comprehensive websites I have ever seen? Will you give us the web address of your website?
It's really simple. It's www.villagesnorthwest.org.
And spell it out.
VILLAGESNW. KBOO.org.
Nice. And again, I just, Hannah's one of the site is just amazing. Even if you have, I mean, just going and if there's something you missed on this interview this evening, I guarantee you, you can go to that site and find literally everything you want to know about villages. But since we're here, let's talk a little bit more about the parlor and the planning and the people involved.
Well, what I always like to say about my planning group is that although we're talking about services to enable people to age in place, the reality is that the ages of the people on my planning group range from mid-30s to mid-70s, with the majority of them being, I would guess, baby boomers. Mm-hmm. But I have lots and lots of people who are in their 30s and 40s. In fact, I just got an email today from a young woman who's, I think, in her early 30s, who totally wants to get involved with this and has offered to help. We're doing surveying this month. It's part of the process of building a village, is surveying the community to find out what services and programs they want to have. So she has offered her skills as a survey analyst to work with that. But
Nice. But
it's really about a wide swath of people. And it's about a wide swath of people who are committed to the idea that not only do they want themselves to age in place, but they want their neighbors and their friends and their mothers and the person who they talk to on, you know, in the checkout line to be able to do so as well, because they actually believe that ghettoizing old people, moving them into an age-segregated community, impoverishes them and it impoverishes the community they come from.
That's so awesome. Thank you for that. You can go home now. That's what we wanted. That's it, right?
It's thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, you asked me once why I'm so passionate about this. And I'm so passionate about this because I honestly don't know what's going to happen to those 400,000 people who are headed down the road. I mean, I'm a baby boomer, and they talk all the time about the silver tsunami. That is who we are. We are the silver tsunami. We are descending on the future. The problem with it is that I know that there is no plan. There is no plan on the federal level. There's no plan on the state level. There's no plan on the county level. There's no plan, one plan that is going to solve this.
Yes.
It is only going to be solved if we do something totally radical, which is we create villages. We make virtual villages. We go back to the old-fashioned notion of loving and caring about each other.
Yes, yes.
Because we can do this, you know. And my favorite thing I always say is there's a great quote from Benjamin Franklin during the American Revolution. And when they signed that document, you know, he turned around and looked at them and said, "If we do not hang together, we shall surely hang separately."
Yes.
And I think that that expresses what's real about aging.
Right.
We live in a culture that promotes the idea that we all have to be independent in our own little pods, and it won't work.
Okay. Right. Right. So, you know, we're running down on time here. I want to get a couple points here out to our listeners. I always like try to anticipate maybe what they're thinking. So, Villages Northwest, people have the ability to come and maybe even if they're not in your particular neighborhood, they can come and join a parlor meeting to learn how to do it, then go to your website.
They're welcome to, anyone's welcome to come to any of the East Side Village parlor meetings or any of the East Side Village 101 presentations. But it's even easier than that. If you live anywhere in the whole Portland metro area, all you have to do is contact us and say, "We want to get together a few people in our living room. Can someone come out and do a presentation for us? Can someone give us resource materials? Can someone help explain this?" I mean, we have tons of handouts. We've walked down this road. I'm part of the National Outreach Committee for the Village to Village Network, which is a nationwide collaborative of all the villages nationwide. We can hook people into tremendous resources, and we can help them get it going wherever they are.
So you're looking at the East Side Villages being up and running September of 2014.
Around then.
So really quick, how long has it taken you to even get to this point? And I guess, you know, as a founder, that's a whole nother layer of stuff that's added on to getting it up and running. So Would you suggest someone starting now to start getting their villages going, because it takes a while to vet the people and the volunteers?
It's going to take somebody 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. from the time they start this process to the time they've fundraised and pulled it all together and done all the process, mm-hmm. because it's really community development.
Sure.
You know, and they're going to have to figure out who in their world, you know, what kind of survey they need to do, what they need to deliver to people, what services they want, what resources they have in their own subsection of mm-hmm. Portland. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some resources that cross all kinds of boundaries. One of our strategic partners is Ride Connection, and they're a fabulous organization who partners with people all across Portland and have been very gracious and have said, oh, well, we would be glad to help train your drivers.
Nice.
You know, so we have, through partnerships, the ability to really move this thing forward for people much more quickly than when I first started and nobody had talked about villages here very much.
Sure, sure. And so it's really, again, you're talking about grassroots, getting out there. You're beating the streets, if you will, making these partnerships like with Ride Connection. What's your next big connection you think that you need to have right now?
Well, one of the things that is true is that there is a group of people up in the Cully neighborhood mm-hmm. in Northeast Portland who are talking about getting something going up there. So I would guess that that might be the second village cluster that will mm-hmm. go. One of the other things that we can offer to people who want to start villages is we can offer them fiscal sponsorship, which will provide them with the ability to function as a nonprofit and take tax-deductible donations, which is pretty pivotal to them in their ability to move this forward.
Sure, if they come under your mm-hmm. your 501c3, your national. Okay. Will you mind giving us your website one more time?
It's www.villagesnorthwest.org, VillagesNW.org.
Hannah, that's truly one of the best websites I've ever seen. People, if you get a chance, just go look at the website, if nothing else, because it really has a lot of information. And we're so close to the end of the hour, I think we should start wrapping things up. But do you want to leave us with a final point that, you know, you want us to walk away with?
I guess what I'd like people to walk away with the idea is that they can actually do this. My husband and I came back to Portland after having lived in California, where there are a lot of villages, and basically decided to set forward on this path because we wanted to have a village.
Yes.
We're not any better or any different or any more talented than many of the people out there. And, you know, there are 110 villages nationwide that are open. And there's another 120 plus that are currently in development. And I can't even keep my paperwork all constant because they keep opening.
Sure.
So if they can do it, if they can do it in Seattle and Ashland yeah. and Chicago, we can do this in Portland, can't we?
We've got this, of course. All right. We're so close. This is so wonderful. But I need to start my wrap up, although I don't want to. I never want to. So our collective. We are Rose and Bread and Roses, and we bring you this show every Friday night at 6 p.m., and women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. This airspace is here to be shared, and if me being on air does not show you that this is a space to come and do and learn and get behind the mic or just hang out here in KBOO, it's a good thing. So if you're interested, please contact KBOO volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes. You can also find us on KBOO's website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, or on Facebook at KBOO Bread Roses Women's News. And I must dedicate tonight's show to all of the people that cares for their parents or a loved one relentlessly and all the time. This show is for you. I thank our guest, Hannah Andler, for being here. I thank our callers. I thank Leanne Krantz for just holding everything down, and our amazing engineer, Brooke, who just kept everything going in the booth tonight. It takes a village to keep this thing going. So, dear listener, now is the time to take the very best care of ourselves all the time and everywhere we go. Thank you for joining us. Be well.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the new lost grave, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too.
You were just listening to Bread and Roses. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Keep it locked.
What's up, fam? You're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. On today's program, political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal on Guantanamo Bay. Also later on in the program, we speak with poverty scholars Queen Anandi and Tiny of Poor News Network about their upcoming event, Born in Frisco. Also later on in the program, we hear from the Black Agenda Report on demonstrators demanding an end of impunity for bankers. I'm Anita Johnson. All this and more ahead, but first, these news headlines.
KBOO Community Radio and Community Supported Everything are proud to co-sponsor All Together Now, a four-hour festival of radical positivity.
Grab a radio, May 31st, 8 p.m. to midnight, and tune into 90.7 FM KBOO as we gather on the Southeast waterfront for this decentralized community festival.
KBOO will be broadcasting a four-hour special set of dance music with updates from the Village Building Convergence as people share their ideas about how to make Portland a more beautiful, resilient, and better place to live. Wherever you are on May 31st, tune in to KBOO 90.7 FM.
All Together Now, a four-hour festival of radical positivity, Friday, May 31st, 8 p.m. to midnight.
More information about community-supported everything can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the events page.
Particles on the wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the wall.
May 3rd through June 14th, second floor gallery in the EcoTrust building.
Particles on the wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
The word Guantanamo has become a watchword for the world. It is a temple of state terror, of imperial fear, and American hypocrisy. Since 2002, it has been transformed from a U.S. naval base on Cuban soil, against the wishes of the Cuban government, it must be said, to a global torture center and an interrogation chamber. Opened under Bush Cheney and maintained under Obama, it has been a detention center designed for perpetual detention to hundreds of men and boys. An international outcry forced the government to release over 500 men back to half a dozen countries. Today, 166 men remain languishing there, with dozens on a hunger strike, an act of desperation after a decade in Guantanamo without charges. 86 men have been cleared for release but remain in chains years later. President Barack Obama campaigned on Guantanamo's closure, but 5 years later, it remains. In the last few months, the Obama administration began seizing family letters and photos, the only connection to their loved ones, as they can't receive family visitors. In desperation, dozens of men have launched a hunger strike, a desperate measure for a desperate situation. The government's response? To lower cell temperatures and to force feed them by stuffing a filthy tube down their throats to fill aching stomachs. Thus, they are torturing men by force-feeding them so that they can live in the torture of indefinite detention. America boasts to the world of its human rights and its values, but they can't hear them over the cries, screams, and moans of the tortured in Guantanamo. Demand that Guantanamo be closed immediately. Free the Guantanamo detainees and return them to their home countries. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next, we'll speak with folks from the Poor News Network about their upcoming event, Born and Raised in Frisco, Word Art.